Welcome to the Steroids Podcast with your host, Dan the Bodybuilder from Thailand. Boom! Boom! Let's get started here. The Steroids Podcast is brought to you by Ultimate Guide to Roids, 109-page ebook by Dan the Bodybuilder from Thailand. Now, for the first time in bodybuilding history, you have someone with no corporate interests and no obligation to please anyone, not walking on eggshells to not offend. Ultimate Guide to Roids gives you the information, the whole truth, not a full truth and a half truth, full truth. Ultimate Guide to Roids gives you the keys to the Lamborghini, gives you the information, and lets you decide what to do with it. It's a crime this information has been suppressed this long. Now let's get on with the podcast.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the Steroids Podcast. First question for today is from LW, who asks, Dan, love your stuff. Been listening to your podcast over and over for ages, constantly learning. Would really like to dive into water retention in a future episode, causes and fixes. That's a great question because I struggled with water retention earlier in my bodybuilding journey until I figured that out. So I can really detail you, help you with that. I'm thinking the obvious, estradiol, but also the other side of it, aldosterone levels, and the possibility of having angiotensin receptor blockers, which are blood pressure medications, or something to combat. He says his knowledge is not good in this, but he's learning about it. Okay, so the thing with water retention is that it's caused by the kidney holding sodium. Okay, so when the kidney holds sodium, then the body balances that sodium that the kidney holds through adding water, because you've always got to keep like the balanced salt level in the body. So if there's more salt being held by the body, there's going to be more water being held by the body. On the other hand, if the salt is just going through your body and your body isn't holding on to it, it's not storing it, it's not keeping it in it, storing it in the kidney, then the water and the salt both just flush through you and you can drink as much water as you want, you can eat as much salt as you want, and there's no water retention. So really the problem here is that we're looking at how do we get the body to stop holding on to the salt that we eat and just let the salt move through it the way it's supposed to. And the answer, you're not going to like this. The answer is insulin, okay? Because when insulin is in the body and it's in a dosage dependent manner, the more insulin that is in the body, the more sodium is stored by the kidneys and the more water is then taken on to balance that. Which, you know, people notice, you know, after they've done things like, pig out on a big few pizzas or other food that is like that type of food that contains a high amount of salt together with a huge amount of carbohydrates. They notice that the next day, you know, oh, I'm full. And yeah, that can be a thing, you know, because definitely having water drawn into the body, drawn into the right spots, can make your muscles, you know, fill up and get that full round look. But when it's in the wrong spots or when it is what they call spilling over or it's too much, then the water spills over into the skin and you get that subcutaneous water retention. But then, yeah, I mean, mentioning that thing about the pizza and everything too, like, you know, people notice, you know, like, oh, you know, I ate so-and-so or when I eat so-and-so, you know, the next day I wake up and I'm bloated, you know, my face is puffy, stuff like that, right? Well, you can really have a huge influence on this through your diet. And really the thing that you need to do first is just experience what it's like when you have very low insulin levels and your kidneys stop holding on to sodium and see what happens. And so how you can experiment with this and see what it does is you can stop eating carbohydrates. You have to eat zero carbohydrates in order to make this happen for 3 days, okay? So you'll need to do, you know, a good 72 hours to really get, you know, the kidney to stop holding that sodium. And by day four, when you wake up after the 3 days on no carbs, and then when you wake up on day four, your face will totally be transformed, especially if you're somebody who's normally dealing with some bloat, because your face will go from like looking smooth and round to looking chiseled and sunk and angular with bones showing. Okay. The face doesn't really hold a lot of fat, but it holds a lot of water, and you can get huge changes in facial appearance by manipulating your carbs like that fast. And so this kind of kidney sodium retention thing is actually the same principle that prescription diuretics like hydrochlorothiazide work off of, where they make the kidney not hold on as much sodium, and then you lose water because the kidney is not holding onto the sodium because of the diuretic. That's its mechanism of action. But you can mimic this same thing through your diet, and actually it's much stronger through your diet. The diuretic effect of having a no-carb diet or a carnivore diet is extreme, okay? It's extreme. It's way more powerful than something like Lasix or something like diazide. In terms of getting dry, it's way more powerful than something like Winstrol or something like Trenbolone in terms of getting dry. A lot of guys probably didn't know that and probably thought, like, you know, it's all about the medicine, you know, the diuretics and the steroids to get dry. Okay, but that's not it. Actually, it's this carbohydrate manipulation. And so that's what, you know, guys do when they're going up to the bodybuilding shows too, is you have a few days where you do the carb depletion, and then you do the carb depletion is to get you into this state where all the water comes out and to get your muscles into this super compensated area where they're going to super compensate and suck up more carbs than normal. Because when you deprive them like that, then they will overreact when you reintroduce the carbs. And so you deplete them, carb depletion. And then when the show's coming up, you know, it's usually like two days is normally enough, but sometimes 3 days, to bring the carbs back in, but, not so much that it starts to cause too much insulin secretion, like insulin over secretion, which will then cause the kidney to start holding sodium again, which then will, like, you see this thing where you talk about guys, oh, well, he spilled over at the show. He spilled over, you know, it's either he's flat, he didn't carb up enough, or he spilled over, which means he carbed up too much. And that's where you're getting these effects. So it's really vital to your bodybuilding to know how the different macronutrients affect you, because they, you know, vitamins and minerals and everything, because they affect you in some ways stronger than drugs do. And so as far as water retention goes, looking hard, looking dry, absolutely body fat is the most important, factor there. And then the next important factor would be diet and insulin control. And then the third most important factor would be diuretic drugs. And then the last important factor would be which types of steroids that you're using. But you can look dry as fuck on testosterone only, or high dose testosterone only, or, you know, anything. The steroids really don't matter if you have this carbohydrate control thing totally figured out. And because that's like a mind blowing thing for a lot of people, because they think like, oh, you take Winstrol and it makes you dry, or you take Tren and it makes you dry. And they do notice effect that there is like a an effect here of like, okay, well, water is being switched to different areas. But if you really want to experience what it's like to truly be dry on a level that, you know, no steroids or no diuretic pills could ever compare to, take your carbs out and make them zero for 72 hours and wake up on the fourth day and report back to me, okay? the effects, I'm talking extreme effects here. So as far as water retention goes, like you were saying, that the thing is too is that when you do have zero carbs in, you can experiment with this a lot too. Like you can eat huge amounts of salt and gain zero water in your skin, which is pretty interesting, because the kidney just does not hold sodium without being stimulated to do so by insulin release. So these kind of techniques definitely used, always have been used by competition bodybuilders, and guys that compete know all about this and do it all the time. It's not new to them. It's the guys that aren't competitors where this would be something that would be new to them, and they'd be like, whoa, like I had no idea about that. But yeah, if you want to figure that out, like personalized to you, I can help any of you guys out with that. With, if you've got a problem with like bloat, or you're like a bodybuilder that's always bloated, you're a guy who's got an always puffy face, etc., I can help you out with this. And, you know, following the advice that I'm talking about here will help you out with this. And you don't need any drugs to control it, you know. Basically what it is like, for a lot of guys, they've got metabolic syndrome. So they've got chronically high insulin levels. It's like half of the people in America probably like have metabolic syndrome because of the Western diet. And so chronically high insulin levels and insulin insensitivity is the main feature of the metabolic syndrome. And so if you've got chronically high insulin levels, well, your kidney is constantly being stimulated to hold on to more and more sodium. So you got guys with bloofy, puffy faces, or you might have a bodybuilder that where guys say, yeah, he's big, but he's really bloated. You know, he needs to work on that or something like that. That's messing up his look. Or, you know, their face, their body looks good, but their face is just like huge. And you're wondering, how can I fix this? Well, the main thing is to fix the metabolic syndrome. So to make it so that you're not releasing so much insulin anymore in response to carbohydrates. So becoming more insulin sensitive. So your body doesn't have to overcome that resistance. That would be big. Acutely reducing their insulin levels through diet is going to help. And that's going to be like the first thing where it's like, yeah, well, we can reduce your bloat in under a week, you know, to almost nothing, even if you're super bloated now. But that's going to take like, you know, a reduction of carbohydrates, pretty extreme right at the beginning there. But once you've fixed this person's metabolic syndrome, once you've fixed their insulin oversecretion issue, well, now you can add carbohydrates back in, and you can have the person eat the carbohydrates where before they couldn't eat these carbohydrates without getting bloated. But now they can, because they're not having this problem of insulin oversecretion in response to the carbohydrates. So, yeah, like if you're a bloated guy, the main thing that, you know, you gotta first see is, okay, well, my kidneys are holding too much sodium. And I'm producing too much insulin in response to the food that I'm eating. And so you got to think, well, you know, how can I stop having so much insulin in my body? And going on that road is going to lead you to not having the bloat anymore. And the great situation is when you're super insulin sensitive, so that you can still eat some carbs and a decent amount of carbs and not get this kind of like water retention mess happening, because you're just only releasing the right amount of insulin for the food that you're eating and nothing more, because of there's no resistance, no insulin resistance present. So I think that pretty much covers that. So a guy, and just to make this clear then, is so a guy with the metabolic syndrome or a guy who has insulin resistance, he, in order to get him to not look bloated, right now he may have to eat no carbs. But after we fixed his metabolic syndrome, after we fixed his insulin resistance, he would be able to eat carbs, or and maybe even a decent amount of carbs, you know, and not have that same bloat. But that's something that takes, you know, a month or a couple months in order to, you know, make some serious progress with the insulin sensitivity. And yeah. Okay. I'll leave it at that. I'll leave it at that. Okay, so next question, Grayson asks, so I know a lot of times you discuss large cycles abused by mass monsters and real competitors, IFBB pros, etc. What do you think the purely aesthetic guys use? I always use David Lade as an example. He's not that big, barely bigger than me, but lean as all hell. He's clearly not natural because of his before photos, but do you think the aesthetic model guys take the same stuff, just lighter doses, dry compounds? Would love to hear your thoughts, and figured it may be a good question. Yeah, I agree with you. David Lade is a good example. He's not natural. That's preposterous to say that he's natural. And so I'm glad you said, you know, that he's not natural. Okay. The super aesthetic guys. Okay. So there's a genetic component to this, and the body that you were born with, if you were one of these guys that was born with an 8-pack, you're going to have so much success being one of these aesthetic guys, because really all you have to do is just add steroids, go to the gym and get a pump, and boom, you've got that 3D look. You already had an 8-pack your whole life. Okay, the thing was is that you just had no size and no angles or 3D popping, right? And so if you just add the right steroids, like you add Winstrol, and you add a little bit of Trenbolone, or you add Primobolan and Anavar or something like that, or you add 2 IUs of growth hormone or something like that, you're gonna have the look produced. And these guys already are in the competition bodybuilder condition just all the time. That's just the way they live. They were like that before they started taking steroids. So these guys, these aesthetic guys that you see, you always see these pictures of them when they were kids. And it's like the guy was 12 years old and he's like sitting on the couch, you know, with his stomach folded forward, and all 8 abs are visible. And he's tiny. He's got like no muscle mass, but he does not have body fat. Okay. So these aesthetic guys that you're looking at, almost all of them were this type of guy. We all had these guys in high school or even in middle school when we were growing up, and we're like, what the hell? You know, it was probably the rate of those guys occurring is maybe like, I don't know, maybe 1 out of 100 teenage men or something like that. You see that one guy and it's like, well, this guy doesn't have body fat. Okay. So again, you just add a little bit of steroids to that, and they're basically wear and go to the gym and get a pump, and it's like boom, they're there. That so guys that do not have that kind of genetic body type, if they're trying to do what these guys that are the aesthetics guys are doing and copy their programs and be like, okay, this is how you produce it, I got to get on the same steroids as these guys, I got to get on the same diet as these guys and the same training as these guys, because that's how you produce that body, it's not going to work. These guys had that body. They were born with that body. And now, literally, you're just putting some finishing touches on it, getting the lighting going, taking cameras at certain angles and stuff, and getting these pics that look really cool. You know, they look great. They're good for it. Attracting women, attracting men. I mean, it works for everything. It's the kind of look that people want to see. that was a joke about the attracting women, attracting men. Because yeah, but these aesthetic guys, you know, girls like them. You know, it's the more bigger bodybuilders. It seems like that. It's you're not really getting a lot of attention as a if you're a big bodybuilder from women for the body as much. It's more there's more a lot of attention from men, but the smaller guys seem to get better attention from the women with that type of physique. Anyways, though, so you're asking like what kind of cycles do they use, and it's just basic cycles. Okay, so testosterone propionate. Very common. Masteron, very common. Anavar is common. Trenbolone is common. Winstrol is common. Primobolan, it's used. A little bit of growth hormone is pretty common. Clenbuterol is really common. Thyroid hormone is also really common. So if you're looking at that and you're looking at you want to look like one of those guys. Really, if you are not the type that was born with that kind of body, what you should be trying to do then is taking steroids and cutting, okay? Like cutting your body weight. You really do not need to be big. It's just being super, super lean, which is these guys' key trait. They're able to make this illusion that they're much larger than they are in photos with that key trait that they're super, super lean. Okay. And so they're not big like you think. And if you can just be like, if you're just like a normal guy, most guys that are like getting on steroids and going to the gym and stuff, they're trying to get big. But a lot of them, they do kind of have that goal, like the aesthetics guys, to look like that. But you don't need to do this whole thing with like getting big and like gaining body weight and everything. Really, you would be much better served by just getting on some steroids and then just trying to diet and getting very lean. You know, melanotan 2 going to be another big one here. You know, you see guys with this signature skin color, which is from melanotan 2. And it's always combined with this look of being on low-dose trenbolone and starvation, like an anorexia type thing. It's like trenbolone, anorexia, melanotan 2 skin color. And that's because melanotan 2 communicates with an area in your brain that controls feeding behavior. And it's a feeding behavior area of your brain that is way downstream from other things that manipulate your food intake, like stimulants and stuff like this. The stimulants actually act to send information to this appetite and feeding behavior area of the brain, like as a secondary thing. But melanotan 2 actually just goes right to the source of the brain and the feeding behavior and affects it and effectively stops you from eating. So melanotan 2 is a potent, potent anorexic. And so, like I said, you'll notice that these guys, these aesthetics guys, they've got a certain skin color, okay? They've got a certain way that their skin looks, and it's because they're using melanotan 2, but it's not just because of the tan, okay? It's their look, this look of being on a very low food diet and being on trenbolone and having that skin color, okay? Melanotan 2 is essential to their thing. And you always see them and you think like, why is this guy's skin so, some of them, you know, they get carried away and you're like, this guy's like so tan, man. He's almost like, it's just weird, you know, like they're so tan or something. And it's like, well, that melanotan 2, that's what's allowing him to maintain this diet and allowing him to maintain, you know, not eating much food, but then not just needing to lay on the couch all the time. You know, he's still got energy and he's able to like maintain it and probably can't eat more food because of how potent that melanotan 2 is as a injectable anorexic. You know, we're really talking about a powerful drug here. So again, I just want to, you know, you're asking, you know, what kind of PEDs are these aesthetics guys using? Look, here's a really big clue for you. And here's something that I'm going to, you know, that I'm telling you from my professional experience where you're not going to hear this other places is look at that skin color, man. Okay. That is a big part of the program. Yeah, you just think that's about the tan, but no, it's not about the tan. It's about the diet and being able to maintain that diet long term of just nibbling on a little bit of protein, nibbling on a little bit of white rice here and there. That's pretty much it, you know? And then getting that look, and then you add trend to that look. So you get the muscle shape and the muscle pop and everything, and you know, that really thin, lean look, you know, with the wasp waist and everything. And then a lot of times these guys have got, you know, a big wide clavicles. It looks great. You know, it looks really good. But there's always a weird look about it, you know. And, you know, some of these guys have also been having problems, you know, because that lifestyle can have to do with, like, partying and stuff too. And like we've talked about in the past, you know, party drugs and bodybuilding drugs don't mix. So if that kind of behavior is being, like a regular part of their lives, they're putting a lot of miles on the car, right? They're wearing down the car's engine really fast. but so let's just go over it. Okay. So the dosage of melanotin 2 that really gives the appetite suppressant effects, you know, somewhere between 500 micrograms to 2.5 milligrams. So you're talking about bigger dosages than is used for tanning. I mean, you're definitely talking about bigger dosages than is typically used for tanning. And each shot is going to, you know, basically produce anorexia for, and it depends on the dosage you take. Again, it depends on the dosage you take, how much of an anorexic effect the melanotin has. But yeah, I mean, each shot is going to produce an anorexic effect lasting like 3 to 4 days. So 2 or 3 shots a week, it would be normal. And then using testosterone propionate, something like 100 milligrams every other day, so like 350 milligrams per week. And then trenbolone, 50 milligrams or 100 milligrams every other day, so like 175 to 350 milligrams per week. Masteron mixed in with that at the same dosage, Masteron propionate. And then other things are played with too, like Anavar, Winstrol, in the 40 to 100 milligrams per day range on those. Little bit of growth hormone, genotropin, norditropin pens, 2 IUs, 3 IUs. And, you know, a huge effect of pharmaceutical growth hormone is fat loss too, and an inability to gain fat as well. So like once you're on it, no longer really having the ability to gain fat. So even if you are eating bad sometimes, it's like, well, if you'll just diet sometimes, you'll still be able to like lose fat and you won't be kind of like working against your bad dieting days since you didn't gain fat on those bad dieting days. So yeah, I think you got an overview now of kind of like the whole picture of what these guys' system is. And the main system being they were born lean as fuck, okay? These guys don't have body fat, and they don't have a big appetite. They never have. And you add some trenbolone to that, doesn't even need to be a lot. You add a little bit of Winstrol to that, and now you've got this basically competition 3D looking like bodybuilder look that's completely ripped, but it's on, you know, a very small guy or a guy, you know, without big muscle size. And it's an amazing look. It's an amazing look. So that's that. And, just to say it one more time before we move on is that, my opinion again would be for the guys that are trying to go for that look and trying to get that aesthetic, fitness model look, or like Instagram, popular on Instagram look, not to focus on the size, really, you know, like getting on a cycle and, you know, pretty much trying to eat protein, pretty much trying to eat mostly protein, bro, on a cycle. Eating mostly protein, you know, you're having, and then, you know, of course, carb cycling is popular. So some days, like, no carbs, other days, you know, 150 grams of carbs. And then, you know, other days, maybe 300, 400 grams of carbs, and kind of rotating it like that through the week. All right. Next question. Jacko. Hello. Love the detailed info you give. You don't learn this shit from YouTube. I'm 205 pounds, 6 feet, and been eating 4,000 calories to bulk and gain 25 pounds in a few months. Thinking about doing testosterone enanthate and trenenanthate, I'd like to cut my body fat down. It's a bit under 20% right now. What kind of calorie deficit should I go for while running tren? I got a trip to Thailand in November and would like to see some abs by then without losing any muscle. Can bench 3 plates, and I want to look really good for my trip. Okay, good job. Of benching 3 plates. That's very important. Everybody that wants to be big, okay, needs to be able to do that or equivalent, okay? That's one of the strength foundation, building a foundation, building a base, strength requirements is to get up to that. And it's a really hard pill to swallow for a lot of people that's going to be necessary. But, you know, if they're willing to work on that and dedicate themselves to that goal, they can hit it. You know, even if you think, well, I'm not a strong person or something like that, or you think like you're a weak person or something like that. Trust me, man, with the right training methods, we can get you there. Probably radically different from what you're currently doing, you know, but you can get there, you know, because 3 plates benching, it's not elite. It's not elite. It's not something that only elite trainers can do. It's something that most trainers, if they're on the right training program, can do. You should be able to expect to be able to do that if you're on hormonal supplementation, for sure. So you're talking about calories, right? And your first thing that you're thinking about, you know, you're talking about you want to be lean for Thailand, and you're talking about calories. What is the calories that you should go while running the trend? Okay. Well, just what I want to tell you is that every bit of food that you put on your body is going to stimulate different metabolic processes. So, like, on the one hand, like, you have fatty acid oxidation, which adrenaline is a big component of that. And adrenaline makes your metabolism go faster. So one thing that you'll notice when you're eating a higher fat, very low carb diet, is that you'll have so much resting adrenaline and energy that you'll feel like just zero need for coffee, for one thing. Like, if you're a coffee addict, you'll just automatically stop drinking it once you get on the very low carb diet, because the metabolism of fatty acids requires the adrenaline in order to liberate them. And so since your body is now running on those fatty acids, basically exclusively, it really ups those hormone levels, and then also your entire metabolic rate goes up because of that. And on the other hand, when you eat carbohydrates, normally the body, a lot of carbohydrates, or just a carbohydrate diet for guys that aren't naturally lean, okay, is a lot of times the body is going to slow its metabolism down in order to be around the amount of carbohydrates that you're giving it, because it likes to run on glucose. And the whole thing with the body is that, like, why do you want to run on glucose so much in your diet? Because a lot of guys that want to do like a fat loss diet, right? They're like, you know, they're not super pleased or excited about doing a low carb thing, but You have to understand that the body has two energy systems that it runs on. It runs off of a glucose energy system, and it runs off of a fatty acid energy system. And so when it's running off of the fatty acid energy system, that is when your body fat is being produced, okay? So if you feel like shit when you diet without a lot of carbohydrates, well, that shows that your body is very inefficient at fatty acid oxidation and fatty acid metabolism, and you need to build that skill or that ability. You need to become good at utilizing and metabolizing fatty acids for energy, okay? And this is going to be much easier doing this with food than it is going to be forcing your body to eat itself, right? So if you can't feel good on a high fat diet, and then be like, okay, well, you know, I can sustain this. I can sustain this low carb, high fat diet and feel okay. Well, then how are you going to feel okay when your body is only running on no food and only its body fat? Because, you know, obviously you're going to be feeling better when you're running on food that's coming in, dietary fat, rather than just eating yourself. So if you can't tolerate metabolizing and running your body on fat, then it makes sense that you want to increase that ability. You want to work on that ability, okay? So the way that carbohydrates, the way that you get really sensitive and really good at digesting them is to eat less of them. And the way that you get really good at eating or at digesting and utilizing fats is to eat more of them. It's reverse on those two things. So that's the first thing that I'm going to say is that when you say you want to get lean, the first thing that you got to think of doing is, okay, well, I want to change my body so that it's primarily running on fatty acids, my body fat. I want to get my body really good at metabolizing and running on fatty acids. I want to have that skill be at its maximum. And then when I have that skill going and it's really strong, then I want to take out food on some days. I want to, you know, have periods of time where there's not a lot coming in and the body fat stores are just tapped and they just, you know, you're running on fatty acids. Your body's good at that. Now, okay, the food is kind of held back. You got the protein, but, you know, the fatty acids from the diet isn't coming in so much anymore. So now the body starts grabbing the fatty acids from the body fat stores. And it's like a flawless process. You know, you never even notice, you know, like going from glucose to fatty acid metabolism, which is actually like a really uncomfortable experience, you know, when you run out of glucose and you start to sweat and you start to shake and you're not good at metabolizing fatty acids. And so then you get like tired and cold and stuff like that. And it's like, maybe you have metabolic syndrome too. So, you know, your body is producing too much insulin all the time. So then since it's producing too much insulin and insulin locks fat cells so that fat cells can't release their energy in a calorie deficit when there's insulin in the blood or a threshold amount of insulin in the blood. Well, now the person's like, well, shit, like, you know, my diet, it just completely stalled. And, you know, the whole calories in, calories out thing that I'm constantly hearing about, you know, it's not working for me. Yeah, that's what you're going to hear a lot. So when you think about, I want to start dieting, you should be thinking about your hormones. And you should be thinking, how can I manipulate my hormones so that my hormones are in the spot where the body really easily digests and utilizes that body fat. And it's not easy for energy to get into my body fat. You wanna set that up. You wanna set those hormones up. The hormones are what dictate the bodybuilding. You wanna have a high muscle mass? Well, you gotta get really high testosterone level, man. That's what really facilitates having being really strong and having a lot of muscle mass, okay? You wanna get lean? You wanna lose weight? Well, you need to work on having low insulin levels, okay? Reducing your insulin levels so that there's less storage hormone in your body, okay? So that your fat cells are able to contribute and they're not locked by insulin, since insulin locks the fat cells. When insulin is in contact with the fat cells, lipolysis is stopped and the fat cells are locked. And if you're in a calorie deficit and you have insulin on board, your body is over-secreting insulin, releasing insulin. Well, when you are in that calorie deficit, the fat cells are locked and they cannot contribute to providing you energy. And so that's, you know, we need to, as bodybuilders, as steroid users, we should all know here that, okay, well, we got past that thing that it's like, you know, like all this other stuff, you know, like we understand that the way the body looks and, you know, like gaining muscle, losing body fat and everything, we understand that this is dictated by hormones. And so, yes, there are other factors that need to be controlled, and they also tie into it. But the master key, or like the thing that is making things have momentum and go one way or go the other way and making momentum in those directions, is the hormones. So again, you got to work on getting, you say you got a couple months until your vacation in Thailand, you want to get lean. Well, you got to work on getting your insulin levels down. So one thing you could do is you got to have a window where you don't have insulin in your system. So the easiest time to do this is like when you're sleeping, man. And so if you can just make it so that your last meal of the day is a protein and fat meal, and the first meal of the day is also a protein and fat meal, well, now you've opened up like a lot of time, including sleeping, where you're not going to be shooting out insulin and having your fat cells not be able to contribute to the energy that your body needs to run. So let's say you sleep 8 hours. Let's say, I mean, you're dieting, and you know it's not good to eat right before bed when you're dieting. So let's say the last meal you eat is 3 hours before you go to sleep. You sleep 8 hours, then you wake up and you eat your first meal, whatever, you know, and that's let's say that's 4 hours. So now we got, and then the next meal, let's say now is when you start eating your carbs, you know, meal two. And so now, you know, you got 8 hours sleep plus 3 hours with that last meal the night before, plus 4 hours with that first meal until the carbs were eaten again in the second meal in the morning. So now you got 15 hours there. You got 15 out of the 24 hours, right in that period where you got no insulin on board, and your fat cells during that 15 hours can now contribute energy and they're not locked. Now, when there's an energy deficit during those times, or even when there's not an energy deficit, but maybe you're training and your body wants to build muscle or something like that. And, or because you've been training, your body wants to build muscle. Well, now your fat cells, for all of your energy needs and all of your metabolic demands, can now contribute the energy to happen because they're not locked by the fat cells. And you got this 15-hour window where this is happening. So another way to think of this is like anabolic time of the day and fat burning time of the day, okay? So during anabolic time of the day, which is like the workout, like You need carbs, man. You need glucose in order to function the best during that, okay? So that's the time of the day when you're getting bigger, when the body is becoming bigger. Anabolic time of the day, workout time of the day, the glucose running time of the day, okay? But then you got fat burning time of the day. And during fat burning time of the day, you don't have this this insulin-producing, fat-loss-blunting carbohydrates on board, you know? And again, we're talking for the average person here, okay? So now, we're not talking about this guy who was born with the 8-pack, because basically he just needs to eat everything he can just to keep what little mass he has on his body, okay? And so this kind of talk, it doesn't apply to these guys that have that they have these genetic gifts, okay? We're talking about the guys who are listening to this podcast, who is not, you know, the ultimate prodigy, but you're just a regular guy and you're trying to figure out, how can I make what I'm seeing happen on my body? How can I change the internal chemistry of my body to be like these guys, like these other guys? And this is what I'm telling you right now. These are the things you're going to have to do in order to make that happen. Or else it's going to be this constant fighting thing where it's like, yeah, on a calorie deficit, if that's the only thing that you used for your dieting, and you were like, well, you know, I know that if I get my calories low enough, I'm not going to have insulin for some times of the day because there just won't be anything in my body. Okay, so you start eating 1,500 calories, you start eating 2,000 calories, and it's like you're in total hell, and you feel like shit. But the weight comes off, right? But as soon as you stop that diet, your hormones, there are other hormones that interact with your brain and tell your brain, you know, what it wants your body weight to be, how much food it wants you to eat, like long term and shit. And so these people that have been starving themselves, withholding themselves, you know, on low calorie diets in order to get lean, well, that's not sustainable. And is you know, a lot of times you'll see guys like from get out of a bodybuilding show and they'll gain like 40 to 60 pounds within like a couple weeks, which is not healthy at all. And it also goes to show that the person was in a very withholding food state, okay? And they're in like a starvation mode, okay? And that's really not what you want to do. You want to get the body hormonally to be in the state where it's comfortable where it is, okay? It's comfortable. It's not in this thing where it's like, I can only maintain this for a week or something like that. And then it's you know, this thing that just blows up. You want to get your internal body chemistry to a state where the look that you want is maintainable. And do it for the guys that are not these genetically gifted guys, doing this thing where you starve yourself, okay? You do a calorie restriction diet or you do, and that's what you go on, you know? You're like, well, I'm eating 1,500 calories. And you know, it doesn't really matter what I eat. And then you notice over time, like, yeah, you're losing weight, but it's like every fucking day that goes by, it's like another day of like a living hell. And it's like, you know, that as soon as you decide to like pull the plug on it, it's like, well, you're going to fucking gain fat back like an avalanche. You know, you of course you don't want those things to happen. Of course you don't want those things to happen. And so that's why getting your body in the proper hormonal state is so important, so that you can lose fat. And it's not this thing of like this major yo-yo thing, or you're not kind of on the same as a bodybuilder on the same trip as all the obese people, where it's like, they diet and maybe they lose a little bit of weight and then they start re-eating again. And the next thing you know, they're fatter than ever again. You know, you don't want to be on that, and you don't need to be as a bodybuilder, right? Cause we know how to manipulate hormones. So that's what I think for you, Jacko, is, you know, the first thing to do would be to not eat carbs first meal of the day and the last meal of the day. And then to listen to my podcast episode on insulin, the master hormone, and, you know, learn some more about how to increase insulin sensitivity, reduce insulin resistance, and really focusing on metabolic syndrome. For guys that are having a hard time getting lean, focusing on metabolic syndrome and insulin control, that's the holy grail for you, man. Okay, well, the next question is, the Motor City Gecko asks, so how do you control chronically high insulin and get shredded? What's the best way for someone to manage having chronically high insulin? An obvious answer would be a low-carb diet and no-carb some days. But are there any subs that help this? Is this what those insulin sensitivity pills are for, like CLA, et cetera, and berberine? Yeah. So you get stuff like insulin mimetics or insulin sensitizers, you know, like berberine, cinnamon, CLA, ALA. There's a bunch of different ones. There's a ton of different compounds that can increase insulin sensitivity. And yeah, absolutely. You want to be using those. You want to be doing things that decrease insulin spikes when you eat carbs, because since the insulin receptor responds similar to like receptors for like dopamine and like recreational drugs, as in like the harder it's hit, the more like negative feedback it receives, and then like a tolerance is created, you know? So you don't want to have like big insulin spikes. So when glucose is, since insulin always spikes with glucose, you don't want to have like high glucose levels in your blood. You want those levels to be more like blunted. So that would be where like more long acting carbohydrates, you know, unprocessed carbohydrates are coming in. Like when you do eat the carbohydrates, you know, it's like you're eating unprocessed carbohydrates. So like whole beans could be a very good example of it. Steel cut oats could be another good example of it. You know, brown rice could be another good example of it, you know, but then you'll have guys like Jay Cutler saying, well, he only ate white rice. But that's another thing, is because Jay Cutler doesn't have the average metabolism. Okay. So, and white rice is fine. White rice is fine. Okay. I'm talking about specifically for a guy who's got like you, cause you're saying, how do you control the high insulin levels? Okay. So understand that when I'm talking about this stuff, I'm not talking to a guy who's like already got everything under control and like he's going good. And I'm saying like, okay, well, you should eat brown rice. I'm not talking to you, right? I'm talking to the guy that doesn't have everything under control like you have yet. And he's trying to solve a problem. He's trying to solve an issue, you know? And so then you have other agents too that can like contribute with this and, you know, like interfere with carbohydrate metabolism and slow it down, so that, you know, you're not getting like this big spike on a graph, but instead you're getting like a kind of a shallow wave coming across. And so that's where things like apple cider vinegar or just vinegar in general come in, using that before eating carbohydrates, which retards the glucose metabolism to some degree. We'd have to go through it, you know. This is a question where it's like, well, you know, you want to come up with, you know, how to really, you know, control your insulin, fix your insulin sensitivity, fix your insulin resistance, get super sensitive to insulin. We're going to have to go through your diet meal by meal, and some stuff with your exercise too, your supplements meal by meal. Anyways, yeah, we're going to have to go through it, you know, like looking at every single thing. And that's like pretty damn complex. But like you said, the easiest way to do it is either fasting or going on a zero carb or very low carb diet. And you should be able to get really powerful improvement through 1 month of doing that. And the thing with the low carb diet too that people have to remember is that when you're on the low carb diet, you cannot be doing a zero fat diet along with that. So you're not eating chicken breast when you're on a low carb diet, okay? You're eating a high fat beef, or you're eating eggs, okay? And the eggs are with the yolks, okay? You know, a really great diet. So like if you say you want an example right now, and you're like, okay, well, Dan, just give me a quick example, okay, of a diet that would work for the insulin control and everything, okay? And fixing the metabolic syndrome and the amount of insulin that you're releasing, et cetera. Okay, 36 eggs a day. Okay. And you can use butter with that to grease the pan, and you don't have to worry about like, oh my God, did I use too much butter or something? Right. Butter is also not something that causes an insulin release. Okay. And so you could eat 3 dozen eggs a day. Okay. 36 eggs a day. You could drink them too. You could drink them if you want. You don't have to cook them. This will result in you, it really doesn't matter. Like even if you're thinking about the calories, which is not a lot, it's like 2,800 calories or something like that, but they're partitioned so highly, amazingly from that egg. If you went on the 36 eggs a day diet, you can, and you can, like, again, you can cook that with a little bit of butter. You could eat a little bit of greens with that if you want sometimes, okay? And you did that for 1 month, you'd be looking at, and this is no matter who you are, man, you'd be looking at somewhere between like 8 to 10 pounds of fat tissue being removed from your body during that month, and a crazy increase in insulin sensitivity during that month, to the point where that if you ate like a small candy afterwards, like let's say you ate a candy that contained 25 grams of glucose, so 100 calories of glucose, that would hit you so hard, and it would produce such a response because you're so sensitive to insulin now that you know, smaller doses of insulin are of being released from your pancreas are going to have larger effects on your body. Like, you know, if you ate two of them, it would probably knock you out. Like, you know, 200 calories of glucose, it would probably like knock you out and make you go to sleep because it's going to hit you so damn hard after that month of the eggs and everything. So these kind of experiences are what really teach you a lot about your body when you do these kind of things, because then you realize like, oh, holy shit, man. So like taking these away from me resensitized me so much that something that I was eating before and I felt nothing from eating it. It was normal. And actually, if I didn't eat it, I would feel like shit. Now, if I eat that same thing after going completely without it for a month, it hits me so hard that I'm dizzy and it like knocks me out to go to sleep. And you realize like, holy shit, like I did not know that my whole life I was eating something that was having such an effect on me and, you know, creating such a tolerance in myself. So this is really interesting stuff. It's really fun stuff, figuring this out about your body too, figuring this out about how, you know, with the Western diet, we're constantly bombarded with glucose. And we also are receiving this advice like, no, it doesn't matter what you eat. It just matters how much you eat. So you know what? Why not? Why not just go to all the big food companies producing all the food in the boxes and packages and with all the chemicals? And why not eat that only? Because that is the same as the healthy, good food, natural food. It's the same. The only thing that matters is how much you eat. It's like this like childish wishful thinking, you know, where they're like appealing to, and you have the whole society fucking saying this, you know, to convince you of this through a systemic effort and these big billion-dollar companies to convince you that it doesn't, it's the amount, not what you eat. Like, yeah, the same amount, the same thing is going to happen if you eat the same amount of calories from eggs versus Twinkies. Like, of course, fucking not, man. It's preposterous. It's preposterous. And it's just more of this same stuff where you've got like all these fucking people who are being paid off and big money people colluding and bribing everyone to say all the same stuff to you. And then, you know, people who just don't know any better, just parroting it off. And pretty soon the entire world is saying it. And then you wonder why the entire world isn't getting the great results. If the entire world has the amazing information that is the best information, then why does it look like everybody's fucking getting the exact opposite results? Why is it that right now we have the most obese people in the world that have ever existed in the world, if right now they've got the best health and nutrition advice? Obviously, it's wrong. Obviously, the health and nutrition advice is wrong. It's just dead wrong. Okay? All right, let's get to the next question. Blake Moore asks, good morning, Dan. Love your content. Been following for years. Nothing short of life-changing advice in and out of the gym. I'm a 45-year-old male ex-powerlifter. I currently sit at 235 pounds, 25% body fat. Typical powerlifter build, LOL. Carry most of my body fat in my gut. That being said, I'm assuming I have a bit of insulin insensitivity and my main focus and goal is to correct my insulin sensitivity and body fat until my next blast. Currently on 325 milligrams of Sustanon weekly. My question is in regards to the pre-workout protocol. Does that change at all while trying to cut? Yeah. So he's talking about, you know, my pre-intra post-workout protein, dextrose, creatine, glucose, etc. Protocol, which is huge, you know, like for getting the 3D look, for getting big muscles, for getting strong, for partitioning the nutrients in the most optimal way. This protocol that I put out, and it's in a podcast episode called Ultimate Guide to Pre-Intro Post-Workout Nutrition. It's like a 30-minute episode or so. This is the kind of thing where if you're not doing it yet, you do it for 1 week, and you're going to see the biggest change in what your body looks like since you began using steroids, okay? By utilizing this pre-intra post-workout nutrition protocol that I talk about, the results are ungodly. Really though, it's shocking how powerful that protocol is. But you know, we're talking, this is a big guy here. He's 235 pounds right now. And that protocol that I wrote is for guys who are big and they're bodybuilders already, okay? And so in that protocol, I talk about using 150 to 200 grams of glucose or dextrose intra-workout. And that will freaking work for guys who are already big, they're already powerlifters, already bodybuilders who are accomplished, and they're trying to, you know, get to the next level and everything, okay? That's going to be a game changer, okay? But for guys who are not quite so big, like you're not there yet, you know, 200 grams glucose is going to be too much for you in the workout, right? So for you, it's more like 100 grams glucose, okay? During the workout, for guys that are like, you know, they're under 200 pounds, you know, or they're not really muscular, okay? It's less. And for guys again that are going to be cutting, and now this includes the bigger guys, okay? If they're cutting, this includes the bigger guys, and you're thinking, well, the pre-intra post-workout nutrition protocol, again, you don't want to have a lot of insulin when you're cutting. And so whenever you put in glucose, whenever you put in dextrose, it's, you could also think of, well, that's like your body then putting insulin into the system. And so when you're cutting, you never want that, okay? You only want, basically, this is what it's doing when you're cutting, okay? And you only want to use about 50 grams, like 25 to 50 grams of glucose dextrose intra-workout, okay? And that's how you change the protocol for the intra-workout. And the reason for that is to stop the cortisol, okay? The cortisol hormone, which is released when you exercise, is a muscle breakdown hormone. It's a catabolic hormone. And you don't want that catabolic hormone in the system during the anabolic time of day, the muscle building part of the day. And so if you can just get some insulin into your system during that time, well, it's a counterbalancing hormone. So you'll turn the cortisol off by putting some insulin into your system. So that's why even when you are cutting, you still should do the dextrose or the glucose intra-workout, but it's in a small amount. Not the large amount. I think that pretty much answers that question. Yeah, 25 to 50 grams. And then the other thing too is that in addition, when you're cutting specifically, you know, so you're turning off the cortisol by using the dextrose glucose in the workout. So, because again, you always want to optimize your hormones, because of bodybuilding, everything, powerlifting, whatever, you got to have these optimized hormone levels. So you got to know what's happening, and you got to know what nutritional switches, you know, are going to be affecting these hormones. So again, you know, for some guy who's wondering, like, you know, why aren't my muscles getting bigger? Well, you want to look at their hormones for one thing, and you want to be like, okay, well, is he catabolic during his workout, et cetera? Like, you know, what times a day for a guy who's, I don't want to get too far into that, but I think you guys understand is that you've got to optimize these hormones. So we're cutting his cortisol off during the workout, catabolic hormone. Excellent. But then also the added bonus to that is that we're still getting the insulin out, which is the super high weight for nutrients to get into the cell. It's a transport hormone. It's a storage hormone, insulin. So then, you know, whatever proteins he does have in his blood, whatever creatines he has in his blood, and fats, when he is in the workout and that insulin is then in his blood, well, now it's facilitating whatever is in the blood to cross out of the bloodstream into the muscle cells. And then of course you've got the pump. So you're concentrating the blood in the muscle as well. So you've really got like a perfect storm for muscle building going on there. So these are just all the ways that, you know, the different effects of having the pre, intra, post-workout nutrition protocol and what it's doing. Okay. Hendrix asks, just took my first dose of Tren. A couple buddies have already run a cycle, and I'm not sure if it was a bad batch or what, but a place about the size of a softball is pretty much a lump on my ass, and it started to be sore almost immediately and just progressed. Is there any way to solve that? Treni 200 milligrams with Testi 250 milligrams. Okay, so you're taking 1 milliliter of each per week. And is it doing that every time you're taking the shot, producing that softball like that? Because that's not good. So really high quality gear doesn't cause post-injection pain, or it doesn't cause a lot of post-injection pain or swelling, you know? It can cause a little bit, but it's not a problem, okay? So I'm someone who's used a lot of pharmaceutical grade gear, so I'm a good person to ask about this, okay? And I can take 5 milliliters of Primobolan or 5 milliliters of Sustanon, if it's pharmaceutical grade, okay, or testinanthate, whatever, okay, or a mix of those different compounds mixed in when they're pharmaceutical grade, okay, so 5 milliliter shots, I can take those and not have post-injection pain, okay, so not have soreness the next day, not have inflammation the next day from 5 milliliter shots, okay, and have that be a consistent thing, and it would actually be odd, or it would be weird if I got some inflammation or post-injection pain. That would be like, oh, I wasn't expecting that. And I don't mean that when I take it, you know, there's nothing. I mean, if the next day, if I like pushed on the spot where the injection was and, you know, like tried to mess with it or something, I would be able to tell, like, yeah, I took an injection there yesterday. Okay, so I'm not saying that there's like nothing and it just... It's like, you know, 5 milliliters of roids were injected and nothing happened, okay? But I'm saying that it's not typically sore or it's not typically inflamed, although occasionally it might be that way a little bit. And it's just like some shots are better than others, you know? But what I'm trying to say here is that you don't want to be using gear that is causing heavy post-injection pain and inflammation. That's not good, and it's not the way that healthy gear makes you feel, okay? Healthy gear that is good, high quality, you know, it doesn't do that, okay? It doesn't do that. A little bit of post-injection pain, a little bit of swelling is fine, but this kind of thing where it's like, I got a softball, or I'm like fucking crippled and shit like that, it's not good, and it's not good to be using gear like that. It's messing stuff up. It's also raising your C-reactive protein, which measures the inflammation in your veins and arteries, and it's a cardiac protein, you know, so inflammation in your circulatory system. And if that's raised, well, you know, you're probably laying down plaque then in your veins and arteries, because when there's inflammation in your veins and arteries, the LDL cholesterol molecule is a repair molecule, and it's always floating in your blood, and it sticks to those inflamed spots and then forms a plaque there. So the main with that again, it's like, well, you want your gear to be with natural carrier oils, okay? So not synthetic oils. The gear should be made with natural oils, natural, high quality, not cheap, highly purified oils, okay? And then the other thing is that when the gear is made, if the gear isn't made in like a really sterile environment or an environment that's like a really clean room, you know, with no bacteria, well, what's going to have to happen then in order to like make up for the fact that it was manufactured in a spot that wasn't, you know, like an ultra clean setting? Well, you're going to have to add more sterilant or to the solution. And so more benzyl alcohol is added to the solution. And that is a major cause of post-injection pain and inflammation, is having too much sterilant in the gear, which, hey, on the one hand, it's cool because it's protecting you from getting an infection, you know, in case there's some bacteria in the gear or something like that, because there was, you know, if there was anything in the environment that it was being manufactured in, maybe it got in there, well, you get some extra sterilant in there, well, that really decreases the chances of any infections. But on the other hand, it causes a lot of post-injection pain and inflammation. And similar things can be said for the synthetic oils. So, you know, if you're having acute problems with post-injection pain, definitely recommend 1,000 milligrams ibuprofen so that you can like get out of bed on those days. It shouldn't be like that, is what I'm trying to say. When you say that you're taking gear and it creates a softball in you like that, that's not a good thing. And really high quality gear generally doesn't do that. However, having an occasional bad shot or something, or an occasional post-injection pain and inflammation would be considered still normal, or having an occasional swelling. But this kind of thing where it's like every time you take a shot, it's like, oh no. What am I doing to myself, man? What am I doing to myself? I mean, your brain there, it's picking up on something true and it's telling you. So you should listen to it.
All right. So that's going to be the last question for the podcast today. It's fun talking to you guys, and I'll be coming up with another episode for you guys real soon here. So make sure to go pick up Ultimate Guide to Roids, 109-page ebook by Dan the Bodybuilder from Thailand. You know, if you just go to bodybuilderinthailand.com, it's I think it's the first article on the homepage where you can check it out and read like 20 pages. It's definitely worth it. It's my best content. You know, if you like the podcast, the book will blow you away.